Great. So let me first thank the organizers for inviting me here. And so I'm going to talk about some recent and not so recent theory work and some very recent experiments. So it's about basically supernativity in novel forms that comes from the pairing of spin helical electrons with spin momentum locking, and how this gives rise to Majorana's in a new material platform, this iron superconductor. So as you all know, that Alexei Kitaev introduced this new model of Majorana fermions in a one-dimensional p-wave superconductors of spinless electrons. And these are zero-energy bound states at the end of the one-dimensional wire. And they can be thought of as a qubit, but the constituent of these qubit is spatially separate at the two ends of the wire. And this leads to some protection, and which may be useful for quantum information storage and processing. And this idea has been around for quite some time. The challenge is that first, we'll need to use a p-wave superconductor to induce proximity effect in a one-dimensional wire. We know that p-wave superconductors are difficult to come in nature. And the other difficulty is that the electron on the spin degeneracy has to be removed. And about 12 years ago, so we had this idea of instead of removing electron spin by a magnetic field, by polarizing the electrons, instead of using a p-wave superconductor, we can use an ordinary s-wave superconductor to proximitize a system where electrons, spin and momentum are locked to each other. And this occurs naturally on the surface of a topological insular. On the boundary, the spin is locked to momentum, and there's only a half number of degrees of freedom. At every wave vector k, there's only one spin state at the Fermi level. And so it sort of immediately takes care of these two conditions at once. Spin degeneracy is removed, but time reversal symmetry is preserved. And this is an optimum condition for pairing. And one thing I want to emphasize is that about the pairing symmetries. So in the spinless electron system, where we have a pairing between k and minus k, this pairing is intrinsically p-wave because of the Pauli exclusion principle. When we exchange k and minus k, it pick up a minus sign. And under, let's say, a two-fold rotation around x-axis, k maps to minus k, and this order parameter change sign. On the other hand, when electron's momentum is locked to the spin, under rotation, both momentum and spin are rotated. So in this case, the spin, for example, which is pointing out of the plane, under this rotation, electron spin up goes down, down goes to minus up. This extra minus sign comes from the fact that they're rotating a spin 1/2 object by a 2 pi gives a minus 1. Okay? And because of this extra minus 1 sign coming from the spin degrees of freedom, this order parameter of the spin helical pairing, the k up paired with minus k down, it actually is invariant on the rotation. So it's S-wave symmetry. So that's why using an ordinary S-wave superconductor can induce proximity effect to open up a gap on the spin helical electrons. And this one-dimensional spin helical electrons occurs at the boundary of a 2D topological insular, and a two-dimensional spin helical electrons occur on the surface of a 3D topological insular. And the kinetic energy here is a Dirac-like with k dot spin sigma. So the dispersion is p-wave, and then introduce a pairing, which is s-wave. This give rise to a topologically non-trivial superconducting state that hosts Majoranas. And one can also see a connection between the p plus ip superconductor in this way. If we look at the eigenmodes on the Fermi surface, at a given momentum k, the spin are oriented in the xy plane, and the spin direction is momentum dependent. And if we write the Hamiltonian in the spin eigenstate basis, what we get is now the kinetic energy is isotropic, which only depends on the magnitude of the K. But now the order, the pairing term acquires a phase factor, e to the I theta. Theta is azimuthal angle. So this order parameter now becomes a P wave-like. So this is why the effective Hamiltonian that describes pairing on the Fermi surface resembles a P plus IP Schumann. But importantly, the actual pairing symmetry is S wave. Now, this actually has several amusing consequences that we recently looked at a bit more. So this work with a postdoc Noah Yuan at MIT. And let's consider a proximitized topological insulator under an in-plane magnetic field. And we know that in an ordinary superconductor, S-wave superconductor without spin coupling, in-plane magnetic field splits spin degeneracy, and we get a bigger and a smaller Fermi surface with opposite and uniform spin polarization. So in this case, it is known for ages that the superconducting order parameter essentially is unchanged up to a critical field, the poly-limiting field. And then the system undergoes a first-order transition into a normal state. And near that first-order transition, there may be interesting phases associated with finite momentum pairing, the FFL states. The situation is actually very different if we think about the spin helical electrons in the in-plane field. Here, the in-plane field actually, there's no spin degeneracy to break to begin with. There's no spin degeneracy to begin with. There's only a single spin momentum locked Fermi surface. And under an in-plane field, for example, in the y direction, the Fermi surface actually gets displaced in the x direction in k space. Okay, so this actually resembles what happens for a Fermi surface in the presence of a vector potential. So essentially, the in-plane Zeeman field acts as a vector potential for spin helical electrons. And now, importantly, I want to emphasize that in this system where superconductivity comes from proximity effect, in the presence of the in-plane magnetic field, the S-wave superconductor, such as aluminum, it still maintains a zero momentum pairing. Okay, so the induced pairing also has zero momentum. But what we will see is that the gap structure of this proximitized surface states is becoming very interesting. So a zero magnetic field, the Fermi surface is centered at k equals zero, and every state at k and minus k, every pair has the same energy, and the pair, to give you a BCS-like gap structure, which is fully gapped, that's this red line here. Now, when in-plane magnetic field is applied, because of this displacement of the Fermi surface in k-space, now states at k and minus k generally don't have the same energy, so there's a pair-breaking effect. But this de-pairing energy is strongly angle-dependent on the Fermi surface. Its maximum de-pairing occurs in this direction, perpendicular to the magnetic field, where the Fermi surface is shifted towards, while in the direction parallel to the magnetic field, to leading order, there's actually no de-pairing effects. Okay, so Ky and minus Ky still have the same energy. So that's why if we plot the gap structure in K-space, it's highly directional dependent, and in the direction where the de-pairing effect is the strongest, the gap function actually is essentially tilted at plus K and minus K. In one side, the gap goes down. In the other side, the gap goes up. And as a result, when the magnetic field exceeds a critical value, the Fermi surface, the original Fermi surface, become partially gapped and partially gapless. And you end up with what looks like very much like a Fermi arc. Right? So in the direction where you have a strong de-pairing effect, the Fermi surface becomes gapless, and you, they reconstruct into a pocket of Bogliubov quasi-particles, while in the direction where the pairing effect is weak, it remains fully gapped. So this gap structure is essentially identical to a FFLO superconductor, which has a finite momentum pairing, and it's also identical to an ordinary superconductor in the presence of a supercurrent. Right? So in the presence of a supercurrent, you can that's induced by a vector potential, you can do a gauge transformation, and get eliminated the vector potential, but now the order parameter becomes has a spatial winding. Right? But here I'm talking about a system which has zero supercurrent, and there's a zero Cooper pair momentum. And yet, because of the spin orbit locking, in-plane magnetic field induces a similar gap structure. And this can be actually detected by looking at the tunneling density of states. And so here, what I'm plotting here is the density of state for different in-plane magnetic field. And zero field, there's a BCS density of states fully gapped. Interestingly, when you apply an in-plane magnetic field, the superconducting gap edge actually moves to higher energy. Okay, very counterintuitive. Instead of superconductivity being weakened by the magnetic field, here the gap edge moves to higher energy just because on one side of the Fermi surface, the gap moves to higher energy. And also, above a critical field, when the gapless Fermi surface, gapless segments of the Fermi surface start to appear, there's an abrupt appearance of the in-gap states. And this is actually a Lipschitz transition. We can also look at the quasi-particle interference pattern. So when the Fermi surface is reconstructed like this, it has a gapless portion and gapped portion. The quasi-particle interference is strongly directional dependent, anisotropic. And the tip of this Fermi arc has a strong density of state, and they lead to scattering, strong scattering at a wave vector connecting these two peaks. So all these are signatures of this interesting pair state. Now, in contrast, so far I've talked about the case I have a spin helical electrons pairing on the proximity effect. Let's also consider another situation where we have a spin helical electrons that intrinsically become superconductor by the interactions among themselves. And again, let's consider what happens in in-plane magnetic field. This is a phase diagram. As a comparison, this is a phase diagram for ordinary superconductor without spin orbit coupling. There is a small region where the finite momentum pairing occurs at low temperature and very high magnetic field. But in contrast, for spin helical electrons, again, the in-plane magnetic field simply displaces the Fermi surface in k-space. So to maximize the condensation energy, the system actually prefers to pair at finite momentum. Right? Instead of pairing between k and minus k, we pair electrons between k and minus k plus q. And this q is proportional to the magnetic field. So the net result is that this is a new phase diagram that there's a wide range of finite momentum pairing states at temperature all the way up to Tc and down to essentially vanishing magnetic field. So a small magnetic field immediately induces finite momentum pairing. So this can be detected from adjustment junction. For example, if we take an ordinary S-wave superconductor and a helical superconductor and separated by a barrier. And when we apply an in-plane magnetic field, depending on the orientation of the magnetic field, the helical superconductor acquires a finite momentum, and that suppresses the adjustment current. So the adjustment current will strongly depend on the orientation of the in-plane B field. Alternatively, one can look at this a layered structure, and when we apply a magnetic field B parallel to this interface, in an ordinary sort of adjustment junction where both sides are S-wave singular superconductors, we get a Fraunhofer pattern, which has a period that's entirely set by the area of this junction. However, here, the magnetic field actually induces a finite momentum on the helical superconductor. So now the Fraunhofer pattern acquires an enormous period, which can be much larger than, it's as if there's an area that's much larger than the geometrical area. Okay, so let me now move on to sort of the second part, which is about Majorana's. In this approximatized TI surface states, with an out-of-plane magnetic field induced vortices, and Majorana's appear as a zero-energy state in the vortex core. And in addition to this Majorana bound states, there generally are finite energy Carolee Dejean states, these are vortex core states. And when the Fermi level is high away from the direct point, the level spacing is small, it's given by delta square over EF. So this has been a challenge. And there's this idea of using helical electrons for Majorana has been taken to a new level by these proposals. Instead of using topological inserters, one can also use these nanowires with spin orbital coupling, and then under in-plane magnetic field, this Zeeman energy opens up a gap. So now we end up with a situation that resembles helical electrons. The right and left movers have different spin orientations. So when Fermi level is 2 and inside the gap, this also creates a condition for Majorana's. So that over the years, there has been numerous experiments on different engineered platforms. All these are engineered platforms involving a topological insulator or a nanowire in proximity with an S-wave superconductor. And in all these systems, the energy gap is very small. They're generally small, and it requires very low temperature. And all these requires fabrication of heterostructures. And starting from 2 years ago, a new platform has arisen. And this really worked. I started from Institute of Physics in Beijing, led by Hong Ding, and later Hong Jing Gao. And a lot of the work is done by a PhD student, Lin Yuan Kong. And the samples are coming from the Brookhaven National Lab. And my student, Michal, who is also here, did a lot of the theoretical analysis. So so this is what I'm going to tell you about is Majorana's in iron superconductors. So this iron tellurium selenium, it's a strongly correlated material. It has a very small Fermi energy on the order of tens of millielectron volt in the bulk. And strong correlation leads to a superconducting state with a superconducting transition temperature about 15 Kelvin. And it's a multi-pocket band system. There's a bulk Fermi surface near the endpoint and near the gamma point. And you know, this looks completely different from the kind of system of Majorana's. But there's some early hints that there is actually a band inversion going on in this system as we vary the composition. So iron selenium is has no band inversion. But as we increase the composition of tellurium, a band inversion occurs. Basically, the p orbital of the tellurium goes down in energy, and that creates a band inversion. So let's illustrate here. As you increase the tellurium concentration, the p orbital goes down in energy and now occupies part of the valence bands. So the most remarkable finding is that from last year, this is a photo emission experiments, that in addition to the bulk bands, there is actually a very clear two-dimensional direct surface states with very small Fermi momentum, and the Fermi energy is very close to the direct point. Not only you have linear dispersion, but the spin-resolved photo emission experiments reveals this spin helical pattern. There's a spin momentum locking. Also, below the superconducting transition temperature, a gap opens up on the surface states, okay? Presumably induced by proximity effect from the bulk. And the gap is isotropic in K-space. So basically, all these conditions are satisfied. We have a spin momentum locked helical electrons with direct dispersion, isotropic S-wave gap, and most remarkably, the superconducting gap is comparable to the Fermi energy. So this is a really ideal condition for creating Majorana's. So then the STM experiment came along. So at a small magnetic field, I think this is probably less than one Tesla, you see that the vortices appear. And in the core of the vortex, a zero energy conductance peak appears. Okay, and in this good cases shown here, the peak really comes out of a vanishing background. And there's a clear gap between the zero bias peak and the superconducting gap on the surface. So further evidence comes by looking at the spatial dependent tunneling spectrum. And this is a plot of the energy as a function of distance across this core of the vortex. And you see that away from the vortex core, there's a full superconducting gap. At the center of the vortex, there are zero energy bound states. And importantly, the zero bias peak remains at zero energy as you move away from the center of the vortex core. It does not split. Okay. And this is again a different way of plotting the same data. So this contrasts with other supernatants, including other iron supernatants. So this is, for example, iron selenium, and this is lithium iron arsenic. Right? All these are iron supernatants, and in all cases, the vortex bound state has been observed. But in these non-topological systems, you see that what looks like there may be a zero bias peak in the center of the vortex, but they actually split as the tip moves away from the center. And it's shown also clearly here. Right? These are in sharp contrast with the situation in iron, tellurium, selenium. And one can look at a more detailed comparison. And the nice thing about this system is that all the parameters are known. Right? The Fermi velocity is known. The Dirac velocity is known from Fermi machine. The position of the Fermi level is known. And the supernatant gap is known. So then when looking using all these experimental measures parameters, one can calculate the Majorana wave function, spatial profile of the wave function. So in the weak tunneling regime, when the tunnel-induced broadening is smaller than temperature, the differential conductance is simply proportional to the Majorana wave function square. And the data compares really well with the theoretical calculation without any free parameter. And we also know that the line width is dominated by the temperature and dominated by instrumental resolution. As you vary the distance from the tip to the vortex over a wide range, the tunnel broadening gamma changes a lot, but the width of the zero bias peak are essentially constant. So in this condition, we're always in the weak tunneling regime. There's now a very comprehensive study from Hanaguri's group, and using extremely high energy resolution and very low electron temperature. In this STM experiment, his group really looked at vortex in a wide range of areas, okay? And these are about 30 nanometers. This is the length scale. And the two types of vortices, okay, two types of vortices, there are vortices which have zero bias peaks and those that don't. And at one Tesla magnetic field, 80% of the vortex has zero bias peaks, and this percent goes down as you increase the magnetic field. So this raises an interesting question. You know, what is the origin of these two types of vortices? So the IOP group also started looking at the vortex spectrum. And in this, in certain cases, when the Fermi level is really close to the Dirac point, you see a zero bias peak, this is Majorana, and the other subgap states are very close to the gap edge. Right? So this is a case that perhaps is best if you want to think of Majorana for anything useful. Now, if we look at also the spatial profile of these Majorana states as well as the Carrier-Dejean states, you see that the Majorana wave function is peaked at the center of the vortex core. The first excited state is also peaked at the vortex core. And this, again, compares very well with the calculation. Because of the spin momentum locking, the first excited state has a completely opposite spin polarization, and it's also centered at the core of the vortex. While the second excited state and all higher excited states, their wave function has a zero in the center, and it's peaked away from the center. So again, this compares well with the STM data. And this is a rare case where these Carrier-Dejean states, the spatial profile can be imaged, and that's possible only because the Fermi momentum is so small. So basically, the radius of these excited states is related to the Fermi wavelengths. So now, one of the theoretical expectations is that in the topological vortex, when the Fermi level is high, the core spectrum of vortex is evenly spaced. In the case of a topological vortex, in the case of a topological vortex, the energy spectrum, if we divide by the level spacing, falls into the integer pattern 0, 1, 2, 3, and -1, -2, -3. Well, in the case of an ordinary vortex, the level spectrum follows a half-integer pattern, one half, three halves, and etc. So this really are topologically distinct quantization patterns. And in the case of the spin helical electrons, this half-integer shift really comes from the pi Berry phase of the Dirac electrons. So, and this is the core spectrum. In addition to the zero bias peak, you see that additional peaks. And also importantly, these additional peaks, the energy also is independent of position. So these are really measuring the energy of discrete core vortex core bound states. And when one plot the energy spectrum of the topological vortex, and you see that the energies all fall into a straight line that extract to zero. So they have to follow this integer quantized spectrum. While in the case of an ordinary vortex, the zero bias peak is absent in the vortex core, and the bound state spectrum has this half-integer quantization pattern. Now, what is the origin of these two types of vortices coexisting in the same material? An important clue comes from this recent study. And by looking at sort of the large area, one can look at every vortices and its neighbors. And interestingly, the topological vortex and ordinary vortex, they are spatially segregated into different regions. And for example, in this region, 75% of the vortices are topological, while 25% are non-topological. And this kind of the high intensity, the zero bias peak. So this image is at zero bias. So in the center of the vortex core, you can see a bright tunnel intensive
blue
state.
Ones also. So the blue ones,
which one?
Ordinary and the yellow ones are topological. Is that what we're looking at?
So the yellow ones, I think, in this figure are topological. Yeah.
And the blue ones are not.
Blue, I think so. Yes.
Zero bias peaks in the blue ones.
That I need to check. Yes, that's a good question. So for example, in the Hanaguri experiment, what they did is that in the Hanaguri experiment, what they did is they did a fitting. Right? These are the DIDV spectrum, and they look at the, you see this, these lines are using a Gaussian fitting to extract the position of the energy position of the core spectrum. Yeah, that's a good question. Right, so, okay, so when we collect the statistics, right, in these different regions of topological versus non-topological vortices, one can actually plot the energy spectrum of the bound states normalized by the energy spacing of the first excited states. And again, in this topological region, you see 35 vortices. They all fall into this integer quantization pattern, while in the non-topological region, they all fall into this half-integer pattern. Okay, so this gives us some hints that I think people are still studying the microscope origin. But one thing to keep in mind is that in this system, the band inversion energy scale is only 20 millielectron volt because spin orbital coupling is relatively weak. And on the other hand, this is an alloy, right? And there's a strong spatial inhomogeneities. So there has been now several proposals that because of the spatial inhomogeneity, the system may undergo transitioning from a strong topological insulator to weak topological insulator or to an ordinary insulator-like band structure and different regions then has, some regions have surface state, some not. I'm almost done, yeah. So so the last part I want to talk about is that the one of the remarkable features of Marana's is quantized conductance peak, and this occurs when the tunnel broadening is high compared to temperature, or temperature is low compared to tunnel broadening, and there's recent reports of this feature from the nanowires. So in the nanowires, the tunnel barrier is created by a confining gates, and so there's been some theoretical speculation that perhaps this smooth confinement potential creates a so-called spatially separated Andrei bound states. These are like precursors to the Marana's, but not fully spatially separated. In that case, the quantized peak may also appear. On the other hand, for STM tunneling, the barrier is really not not smooth at all. It's a sharp tunnel barrier, and this is the efforts towards that, that as you vary the tip distance, make it close to the sample surface, you see that the zero bias conductance starts to saturate, okay? While the energy of the higher energy excited states that keeps increasing, okay? This is I'm running out of time. And the plateau of this conductance in most cases are not E squared of H. So one can ask why, and perhaps it's related to the quasi-particle poisoning, still trying to understand. And in some case, the conductance reaches the quantized value. So let me skip this, that in addition to iron, tellurium, selenium, there's another system which shows these zero bias peak with integer spacing in the, of the current Dirac states. And in this system, it's not an alloy, it's a stoichiometric compounds, and also the spatial profile. Now you see both the Majorana states, the first excited state, second and third excited states, and all of these compares well with simulation using the same set of parameters.
What is this compound?
This is here, involving lithium. Yes, it's like a yeah. Okay. So I think I'm running out of time. There's been a lot of interest in the community, and these are some commentary articles, and I don't know if video talk about. In addition to Majorana bound states, there are some hints that there's a one-dimensional itinerant Majoranas. So yes, let me stop here. So there's also a program at KITV right now, topological materials, fantasy and reality, and I really like the image. And so if you look at it closely, right, in the magnets. And you find my run. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for the report.
Yes, you first.
Yeah, I have two questions. The first one is to the second part of your talk. You mentioned that in a conventional superconductor, like lithium, iron, arsenic, there is no spatial, as you scan the tip away from the vortex center, there is no energy splitting.
Right.
Could you? Just for regular?
Is
that what you
question.
Expect for regular Károly Dirac metric cores?
Yes, that's an excellent question. So I have the slide here. Right. So the ideally, right, the core spectrum is always discrete. But in the ordinary supernatural, when the Fermi level is very high, the level spacing is delta squared over EF, is extremely small. So then, you know, the temperature broadening will easily smear the discreteness.
That's why instead of discrete.
And this is what one sees in, for example, niobium selenide.
Okay.
That what looks like there's zero bias peak.
Okay.
Is because there's no way to resolve the small energy spacing. But as you move away from the center of the vortex,
yep.
Right? Now you are essentially probing predominantly those states which has finite angular momentum, and those wave functions are centered away from the vortex core, and they have finite energy. So that's why it looks like they split.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
But and in these systems, because the Fermi level is so small, you really can measure the discrete energy spectrum. The level spacing is large.
The other question I had is for the first part of your talk. So when you model, so this is where you have a proximity effect.
Right.
So when you model the proximity at the level of the Hamiltonian, you're essentially just adding a sort of reduced BCS Hamiltonian, correct?
Correct, yeah.
So in that sense, how do I see that intrinsic pairing should have any different effect in parallel field?
You mean
as the proximity,
the intrinsic versus the
because the way you write this down at the Hamiltonian would be exactly the same.
Yeah, that's a good question. So what happens is actually what you put in actually. So in the case of the proximity-induced system, the delta, right? This delta remains a zero momentum order parameter in the presence of magnetic field because it comes from aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
And people have in the back early days in the BCS theory, people have calculated how the order parameter changed with a magnetic field,
mm-hmm.
and below the point limit, the order parameter remains zero momentum for S-wave supernatant. But when we look at the intrinsic supernaturality for the helical electrons, we really need to solve the gap equation self-consistent in the presence of magnetic field. So I'm not showing the details, but what comes out of that calculation is that the momentum of the Cooper pair increases linearly with magnetic field. And you can expect that basically because the Fermi surface is now displaced in k-space. So to gain energy,
mm-hmm.
it's more preferred to have finite momentum pairing.
Thanks.
Okay. Can I ask two questions?
Sure.
So my first question is, I guess a lot of the community who have studied Majorana bound states would like more some people are quite skeptical of like zero bias peak still, right. I guess. Is there any evidence of chiral edge modes, for example, at step edges or something like things that, that video?
Yeah, actually, video may talk about that. Yeah. So, for example, in this system, right, there's one scenario. Right? I mean, I don't know if this has been observed or not, but there's one scenario which I think is interesting. You know, you have a superconductivity on of these helical electrons, but also iron carries magnetic moments. Right.
Right.
So in particular, there are compounds which has excess iron. So one possibility is that these iron moments will become magnetic ordered and then open up a gap at the direct point. So then we will have an interesting scenario of a supernatural region and a ferromagnetic region. And then there will be a one-dimensional chiral magnetic fermion on the boundary, on the interface.
Right. Okay, so my second question was about the band structure of this material. Right. Presumably, this is a multi-band system that's compensated or nearly compensated, and the photoemission is really only at the at one particular point of the Brillouin zone. But presumably, there are bands at other parts of the Brillouin zone that also create surface states.
There are certainly other bulk pockets. For example, there are pockets at the endpoint. As far as I know, in terms of the surface states, you know, the photoemission study, which varies the photon energy that can distinguish surface and bulk, as far as I know, the surface states only come from the gamma point. And that's consistent because of the fact that the band inversion only occurs around the gamma point.
Okay. There might be a surface state that's specific to the surface that comes from this topological state. But there are still bulk bands that get bent as they approach the surface and create their own surface states.
Yes, absolutely. There are certainly bulk states that goes all the way to the surface. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this is something I didn't have time to talk about. So the way you can...
They will coexist. Their identity will coexist.
So the way to think of it is the following. Let me see, where is it? So the way to think about the system, the way I think of it is, where is it?
I mean, it's not an insulator at the surface,
that's right.
But for the topological surface states, right?
So there is
a nettle.
Look at this,
with these weird surface states.
So these are the Fermi energy of the surface states, of the bulk states, and this is the superconducting gap of the surface state and bulk states. And you see that in all cases, right, the Fermi energy is small, only a few tens of electron volt, and there's a gap. Very importantly, there's a superconducting gap for surface states and for bulk states. And that's seen, for example, in STM tunneling. If you look at STM tunneling without any magnetic field, for example, there's a hard gap. And there are multiple gap edges. The smallest one is a supernatural gap of the surface states. The bigger ones are coming from the supernatural gap on the bulk bands. So it's true that there are bulk states near the Fermi surface, but they have a supernatural gap. They are gapped. So that's important for all this.
Regarding the I'm trying to remember my question. Regarding the tunneling between the 3D TI and the superconductor, you showed a in-plane field tunneling spectra, which showed a. Can you show? It before. You showed sort of an Andreev-like.
This is not an Andreev. This is just tunneling.
The black curve here.
Right.
So is that like a continuum of in-gap states? How do you
Magnetic field, so when the field is small, the gap is, there's still a full gap. So then there's no in-gap states. Right? So that's shown here, for example, the green line. This is for the clinging limit. Right? And but when the magnetic field exceeds a threshold, when the Zeeman energy is above the gap, you see now the in-gap states. That's because these bulk-lipid quasi-particle comes down.
Normal carriers in the gap.
But not quite, because these are superposition of states at k and minus k. These are bulk-lipid quasi-particles.
Uh-huh.
So we end up with a situation you have a bulk-lipid Fermi pockets at the Fermi level, which is quite which is unusual, I think.
So then if you tilt the field away, they just, is there just a projection of the field component in the plane?
This only depends on the parallel component, right? And as you wrote, if you can also rotate the magnetic field in the plane, and then the question, then what happens that the gapless portion of the Fermi surface, right? It also rotates.
Yeah, my question would be in a tunneling type experiment, how could you
In tunneling strain, you only detect the this total density of states.
Yeah.
But on the if you look at the quasi-particle interference pattern, you will see, for example, as you rotate the field in plane, you will see the quasi-particle interference pattern also rotates in k-space. And also, this pattern itself is certainly something we didn't expect, right? So because you know, as you apply a magnetic field, the gap edge actually increases to higher energy. Very counterintuitive. Yeah.
Do they know how deep the vortices are?
Say again.
Do you know how deep the vortices are in the vortex lattice?
How deep?
Yeah, because presumably there's like a vortex lattice to do with the surface, and then a vortex lattice to do with the bulk.
Right. So here the question. So here when I talk about in-plane field, I'm only considering the Zeeman effect. You know, I can assume that the supernatant is very thin, so that there's no vortex penetrating. That's the assumption.
No, I guess I'm for the later slides.
Later slide, yeah, sure. Okay.
So Leon, can we go back to that table of delta and EF? Again?
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess. Okay, I guess my general concern has to do with the line, the fact that the vortices are line vortices, and they
correct.
Probably have bulk states. And relevant to this is that, well, let's say for gamma or m, the bulk states, I mean, depending on where EF is, like,
right.
we could have delta squared over EF be rather small.
Right. So what the way to think of this is the following, and this also relates to James' question, is that in the vortex core, right, there will be low lying bound states from the bulk,
right.
The bulk vortex line. Then what you can think of is that the surface states give you Majorana's,
yes.
But they can couple, when you have impurities, they can scatter into these bulk low-lying states. They can couple to these low-lying states. So what this is like? It's like it's a source of quasi-particle poisoning, essentially.
Okay.
You have a Majorana state, but it's weakly coupled to a bath. So the effect of this coupling to the bath essentially give you a poisoning rate, and I should have a slide here. And this has various effects. So there's a poisoning rate essentially. The effect of the vortex line in the bulk give you a poisoning rate. Right. So you see when you have a source of poisoning, and if you look at the zero bias conductance peak. The conductance is given by this formula from this work by Patrick Lee. So gamma L is the total broadening. One part comes from the tunnel-induced coupling to the leads, which is extrinsic. But then there's a poisoning rate, which comes from these low-lying quasi-particles that essentially you can model them as a bath, another bath. And you see, when the poisoning is absent, this total broadening is equal to the tunnel broadening, and then you get this quantized conductance 2e squared of h at zero energy. But when there is an additional poisoning from the bath, the zero bias conductance is reduced from 2e squared of h.
But you don't need impurities to do this, right? Isn't the surface break enough momentum conservation?
No, surface and bulk states don't mix. They don't mix. In a clean limit, there's no. They have different momentum, right?
Oh, different in plane.
They have different momentum. Yes, they don't mix.
Okay. So as long as okay. Good.
Yeah. So all what causes them to mix is impurities and all that. Right? And in fact, you know, because of these Majorana bound states, that they have a spatial profile of let's say 10 nanometers roughly, right? That a local impurity potential the mixing measure level is going to be small.
Sorry, if you can match in plane momentum. And still get scattered. I mean, the in-plane momentum of the surface state does overlap the bulk, no?
No, they don't. Okay. Let me show you. Yeah,
okay.
Actually, yeah, that's a very good point. Let me look at this. They are far mismatched. Look at this. Right, this is a pocket of the bulk, right? And there's tiny pocket coming from the surface. Right, so they're mismatched. And
as
also,
KZ
in other way,
increases, as KZ
also
increases.
Look at this here. You can look at here, right? This is a better thing. This is a work actually from IOP and ISSP, Professor Xing's folding machine data. And you can see that these are the surface states.
So it's not a spherical Fermi surface?
It is a rotational. It is a circle.
It's a circle, not spherical. That's what I'm saying.
It's two-dimensional.
Two-dimensional.
Right. These are two-dimensional states on the surface. They have a very small momentum.
All states are not also. Well, they should be three-dimensional.
No? It's two-dimensional surface states. Yeah.
Okay. So let's thank the speaker again. And we'll convene at 10:50.